Devin Stack.
Oh, look. My thing's missing. Hang on
a
second.
Oh, no.
I'm invisible.
This is Outlaws. I am Rebecca Hargraves. This is Devin Stack dealing with a technical issue.
I'm back. There we go.
But it's okay because he has AIDS. He's actually dying of AIDS right now.
I am dying of AIDS. I have Jew AIDS. And
in the desert.
It's quite powerful, as you can
imagine.
I like
to irritate Devin by calling him. And when I called him yesterday to talk about nothing, he was like, I've been puking for like 5 days. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I don't know what's going on. It's fine. I'm probably dying. I was like, we can cancel the show or like do it at a later. Oh, it's okay.
I've been poisoned.
It was me. I poisoned you so I can take over the show.
That's right.
I'm just joking. What a nightmare that would be. Like right before we went live, he's like, I feel terrible. You're going to have to be point man on this. Just set me up and I'll make some jokes. I'm like, why are you just telling me this now? Otherwise, how are you doing, Devin?
Aside from the Jew AIDS, I'm doing all right, I guess. How are things over in your neck of the woods?
Oh, good. I just got back from Iowa, which is I know some of our audience is from Iowa. It is a nothing state, and that state shouldn't exist. I swear I would rather live in Mississippi. It's a piece of shit state. I hate everything about it. I have to go there because my brother lives there. Pella is really nice. It's like a beautiful Dutch town. But Iowa, it's like being in purgatory. There's nothing there. It's just nothing. It's the great nothingness. And everybody is so fucking fat.
What's the big? I don't think I've even been to Iowa. What's the big city in Iowa?
Des Moines.
Yeah, I don't think I maybe in an airport maybe once, but
wow, you've never been to Des Moines? You have to go to Des Moines. Sucks. Iowa sucks.
And everyone's fat.
And everyone's fat. Yeah.
Is
and
it,
tons of trannies.
Really?
Yeah.
Why
well,
so many
Des Moines,
trannies?
I don't know. We went to this place called
Zombie
Burger.
I feel like Iowa would be like a white place.
Well, but it's like people in middle America, I think, got hit really hard with all the Jew nonsense. They're super fat. A lot of them are addicted to opiates. And then the tranny thing, especially in Des Moines. Like I went to this place called Zombie Burger the last time I was there and in Des Moines. And in that restaurant, I saw 4 trannies.
Wow. I kind of feel like a lot of white trash people went with the tranny thing. Because I think it's people that were destined to be pedos anyway. So like all these like weird, creepy guys that would have just been, you know, hey, kid, get in my van. I mean, they just turned into trannies. I mean, because there's way out here where I'm at. There's a tranny that must keep getting fired from jobs because I keep seeing him at different places.
Why?
I don't know. But
if you were a tranny, why would you be like, I want to live in the desert? Why wouldn't you move to literally any American city to be with people of your kind?
I don't know, but this is the same tranny, and he's like at like every like I'll go to like this place and be like, oh, I'll never go in here again because I don't want this thing touching my food. And
yeah.
Then like a month later, he's somewhere else because like probably because he was touching people's food, and everyone else had that same thought. So
yeah, but why would you even hire a tranny? Why would you hire a tranny?
I don't know. I wonder if it's, people are afraid. Like people used to be afraid of getting, and they probably still are, of getting sued by nigs and whatnot. You know, like, oh, gotta hire the flamboyantly gay guy or we're going to have a lawsuit on our hands. You know, that kind of thing.
Oh, I just deleted my YouTube chat. Okay. Can you intro the story we're talking about while I fix this? Sorry, guys.
Intro the story about trannies.
There are no trannies involved in this story.
Well, I guess we're going to be talking about the DC sniper case, something that we haven't covered. I haven't covered on Insomnia Stream. However, I did used to live in the area where it took place, not while it was taking place. I went there afterwards, but I knew a lot of people who had lived there during that time, and it kind of left a mark. It kind of left a mark because for a little while in and around our nation's capital, the people that most of whom work in some capacity for the federal government, lived in fear. They lived in fear of just being randomly shot in the head when filling up their gas tank, when walking out of the grocery store with a bag of groceries. They didn't know what, you know, there was no rhyme or reason to it. People were just getting randomly shot in public. And yeah. And it took a long time before they could figure out who was doing it.
It took too long. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Right.
But I was talking to my mom about it, and she's like, "Oh yeah, people were freaking out all across the country because they didn't know if it was just isolated to the DC area." And I saw some video footage of people at gas stations putting tarps all over the gas station so that the sniper couldn't get a good shot. But apparently they gripped the entire country, and people were not going to the grocery store, or they were parking right outside the front of the grocery store and running in.
Well, this was, you got to remember too, this was post 9/11 hysteria where everyone thought that Al-Qaeda was slinking around, just getting ready to suicide bomb something or another. And the government was kind of leaning into this stuff too, obviously, because they wanted us to support wars in the Middle East. You had the the anthrax types, things going in the mail, which would later turn out to be coming from, FBI labs. You had lots of stuff like that going on where people were in constant fear. I mean, 9/11 really did a number on people, just generally. You have an American public that had been living safe, during two world wars, and during Vietnam and during Korea. Like, we'd involved ourselves in so many of these wars with these high casualties, but never had it really anything happening here at home. In fact, nothing really has happened in the United States since, the Civil War, maybe, right? So anytime that there was something that changed that, which I guess you could say the war on terror changed that, it really made Americans feel unsafe for the first time. So when you had something like this going on, it made everyone unnerved and everyone freaked out. Until they found out, of course, that it was just black people. That
He was Muslim, though.
Well, he converted to being Muslim.
Yeah,
and, but he was just black. Is really what it meant. Because he wasn't like motivated by being Muslim. Although I'm sure that helped things, but
he was really into Nation of Islam, though.
Yeah, well, and those guys hate white people probably more than the average black guy, but just because you take it from 8 to 11, is it really
right?
I guess we were gonna try to, when we were talking before the show, something like we could tell, slowly reveal it, but I think that everyone pretty much knows it's black guy and his little illegal immigrant, or at least at the time. I don't know what his status was when he was arrested, but he was an illegal immigrant from Jamaica. So why don't we instead go into what triggered this? Because it actually started, in fact, the killing started way before they started sniping people in the D.C. area.
Yeah.
And so what do you think started this nig on his journey of death?
Well, first, he was in a bitter custody dispute because he perceived that he had been screwed by family courts. But what had actually happened was that he had kidnapped the child that he had had with his first wife, and she went to family courts, and he lost custody of this child. So he goes, he has this little protege, this little boy that he picked up in Antigua when he was 14. And, of course, this kid was fatherless, and dealing with, an absentee father, and his mother was a single mother who was unreliable. She was abusive. And so he just really locked on to this older figure, last name Muhammad, John Muhammad. So John Muhammad immediately sees that he is a vulnerable boy, and he's like, this is perfect for my accomplice, and he gets the boy eventually after a few years of arms training, meets when they're 14. I believe this is when he's 16. This is in Tacoma, Washington. He goes to the house of a friend of his ex-wife, his first wife. And this wife was convincing him, or maybe it was a second wife, who he had two children with. She was convincing him to seek a divorce because they had an abusive marriage. So the younger guy, the apprentice, goes to the front door and her cousin answers, this 21-year-old, and he just shoots her between the eyes. She has a baby in the house that's left on the changing table. And the police were like, even though obviously in an investigation today, this wasn't that long ago, though. I mean, I feel like they really should have figured this out right away. This is the first killing.
Right.
And they aren't like, oh, who has a grievance with this woman? And it would have led directly to him. Even if they talked to the second wife, she'd be like, yeah, it was him. He had already threatened to kill her by that point. But they just did like a really shitty investigation of this. And the other woman in the house, the one that was friends with Mildred, his second wife, found her, was it her cousin, her niece, something like that, found her just dead at the front door. He just murdered her in cold blood. So that was the first murder. And what I read about it was that it was like a gang initiation. He wanted to see if he could get this kid to kill somebody, which of course he did.
Well, and that's what they do. They blood you in. Gangs do it. Military special forces type organizations do it. It is to, you know, pop your cherry to get, you know, once you've done it, you know, it's no longer like this ooh big scary thing. The Israelis kind of go a different way with it, where they make you raise a kitten and then kill it. So that's a little more psycho, but a lot of these organizations and gangs and, you know, the mafia will have you go blast someone, sometimes at random, to prove that you'll do it. And oftentimes, hold on to the murder weapon so that they have some kind of leverage over you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he did that. And it's funny you say that, you know, why didn't they look at him? I almost wonder if it's a case where, blacks get shot in the face all the time.
And they're and like,
Yeah, they're just like, yet another one, you know? And,
yeah.
And they just, you know, they're so backed up with it, they're just like, whatever. You know,
probably, but it wasn't like a drive-by shooting. She was shot point blank after opening her front door, and there was a baby inside. So
yeah.
It's like, you think that there would be some kind of investigation. I mean, if they would have done this properly, the subsequent people wouldn't have been murdered. A lot of them were white, too. So it's like, what's the plan here? Anyway, they continue to go on a mounting killing spree. The next one's in Tucson. And it's just a guy, Jerry Taylor, he's 60. He's just practicing chips on the golf course. And he, gets shot and killed, died from a single gunshot fire, long range. And that actually was never tied to them. They did not know that this was them until Malvo, the younger one, confessed. Then they get somebody in Louisiana in a parking lot, a white guy, after he stopped to deal with a slashed tire. I think that they probably slashed it. And then they get somebody in, another white guy in Clinton, Maryland. They actually robbed this guy, which is why the police did not investigate this. They stole $3,000, a laptop, and then this was used to fund a better arsenal and some other things so that they could actually start the real rampage, which happened a few weeks later. They shot somebody in Silver Spring, Maryland, outside a beer and wine store. And that was a random shooting, supposedly. So this was 18 days before the series of murders happened in DC. And then they shot some people outside of another liquor store in Maryland. Let's see, what else we got? We got Claudine Parker shot during a robbery, Kelly Adams shot during a liquor store attack, and somebody in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So it was all over the place. The police forces were not connecting these, which I don't know why they would have. Some of them were robberies. Some of them were just random shootings. But that first one really should have tipped them off.
Right. Now, you mentioned that they got the $3,000. And people might think that's not a lot of money, but yeah, I wanted to. I'm like, all right, inflation calculator. Even though 2002 doesn't sound like a long time ago,
Yeah.
I'm kind of just out of curiosity. I want to know how bad it is.
What is it? How bad is it?
Let's see here. It's yeah, it's pretty bad. So $3,000 in 2002 is $5,500 today.
I mean, that's definitely enough to get things going.
Yeah. So yeah, that basically was funding them, and things were just cheaper back then too. Plus, they were kind of living out of their car. So, and from what I understand, as part of his strict training as a sniper killer, they only ate once a day, and they ate it was something like honey and
Crackers.
crackers. Yeah,
Yeah.
so
They thought
that's
that it was more, it was easier for the body to digest carbs and sweets. And if you only ate once a day, that was better for them. And they were doing all this tactical training and they were working out a lot. So yeah, it was like, and then he was making the kid, he wasn't really a kid, he was 16 at this point, but play super violent sniper video games all the time and re-watch The Matrix over and over to desensitize him for violence. I was thinking, like, if you're trying to desensitize somebody from violence, why would you watch The Matrix over and
Right.
over? It's not a particularly violent movie, but apparently that he thought that was going to be the way to get him.
Maybe he was just trying to red pill him.
Yeah, really. And then they call this the first shooting from the DC snipers, the Beltway snipers. This was James Martin. He was a program analyst. He was shot in the back while walking across the parking lot in after grocery shopping. And the ballistics later linked this to the investigation. And this was on October 2nd. And October 3rd, this is when the real rampage began. And after October 3rd, they could no longer deny that these were linked shootings. I mean, I think all five of these happened within a 27-hour period.
Yes.
So somebody mowing the lawn. Then we've got, this is all the same day, somebody pumping gas in Maryland. These are all in Maryland. Somebody shopping, somebody vacuuming her van at a gas station, and somebody just walking in the street in DC. So they were moving towards the DC area. And at this point, cops, everybody was freaking out because these were suburban areas. These were white areas where there were not any black people. There was not a measurable level of crime. I think I heard that their murder rate in these areas had increased by 100% in a single day.
Right,
So at this
right.
point, they were like, yeah, this is something crazy
These
is
were like
happening.
the suburbs outside of DC, where if you were, like I said, if you were a government contractor, or if you were a federal employee, this was where you lived, and then you commuted into the city. Or there's also like a lot of contractors and federal buildings in and around DC too. Like NIH is out near Rockville, and there's a bunch of buildings around there.
We have a news blurb, I think.
Now this is from Rockville, Maryland, a place I once stomped around in. Let's see here. Here we go.
Back here live in Rockville, the man who was gunned down here around 7:41 this morning was gunned down right behind the Fitzgerald Auto Mall. He was cutting this small strip of grass over here when he was shot.
It's not a lot of grass to cut, and Sonny Buchanan was not just some guy who mows lawns. Dottie Fitzgerald, who's president of the Fitzgerald Auto Mall, says Sonny owned a landscape design company based in Rockville, but really lived in Blacksburg, Virginia.
You know, he made a commitment to us to do this year. He's really moved from here, and we found out that he was driving up here on the weekends in the middle of the night and sleep in the truck for an hour or so until daylight and then cut the grass. Now, you know, a lot of people would have said to you, I'm real sorry I've moved and you're going to need to get somebody else up. But when that man gave you his commitment, he kept it.
And she says he was a dedicated civil servant who gave back to the community. He was once on the board of the Montgomery County Boys and Girls Club and the board of Crime Solvers.
He was just a good human being. He did so much with the kids in this county, with the Crime Solvers and with the Boys and Girls Club. He taught them so much about I'm sorry.
It's ironic that he was killed basically a block away from where he gave so much of his time selling Christmas trees for the kids.
So sad.
We miss him. The calls are coming in. The parents are on the phone crying. Literally, Sonny was like a staff person there, but he was a volunteer.
Fitzgerald employees initially thought Buchanan was injured in some kind of lawn mowing accident, but quickly learned he'd been shot. Somebody tried unsuccessfully to administer CPR.
Nobody really knows right now. You don't know if it's an act of terrorism or if it's just somebody that's some nut out there running around shooting people. So it is kind of scary.
So, yeah, that shows you how low the crime rate was. When they first saw him lying down by the lawnmower, they thought the lawnmower had, like, exploded or something and somehow hurt him. And so, in fact, the initial 911 calls into 911, the guy says, yeah, I think his lawnmower did something to hurt him. And they're like, what? And then, he bled out pretty quick. By the time they got to the hospital, he was already dead. So that was Sonny Buchanan, who was the first person shot in the morning of October 3rd, 2002. But then, as you say, the killing spree went on from there at 8 o'clock. This was 7:41. He's killed in Rockville off of Rockville Pike. And then by 8:12 at a mobile gas station at Aspen Hill Road in Maryland, there was a Prem Kumar Walakar was shot. And then at 20 minutes later, at a Leisure World shopping center in Norbeck, Maryland, Sarah Ramos was shot. And then just a little over an hour later, Lori Ann Louise Rivera was vacuuming out her van at a Shell station, and then she was shot. And then just a little bit after that, or it looks like I got the order wrong, I guess before that was Pascal Charlotte was shot at a or was just walking in Washington, D.C. So they ping-ponged around through Maryland and Virginia and D.C., just around the Beltway. And, they were shooting people. So here's another news report that kind of explains, like, they're trying to deal with this, trying to figure out, well, what the hell is going on here.
The five deadly shootings happened in a matter of hours and in the same general area. Montgomery County Police have set up a command center at the scene of the third murder in Aspen Hill. Our team coverage continues from there with Fox 5's Bob Barnard. Bob.
Well, Tracy, Montgomery County Police Chief Charles Moose says the killer is a very skilled shooter who started his rampage around 5:20 last night, shooting out the store window of a business just about a half mile from here. It's the only one of the six shootings that didn't end in bloodshed and death. The unprecedented murder spree began last night in Wheaton. The victim, a 55-year-old man, shot dead walking into the Shoppers Food warehouse on Randolph Road. The murder captured on a surveillance camera. 13 hours later, at Rockville Pike and Nicholson Lane, a landscaper is shot and killed. It's 7:41 a.m. Half an hour later, a cabbie is shot dead at this mobile gas station on Connecticut Avenue at Aspen Hill Road.
Just a loud noise, and he's laying in the parking lot bleeding to death.
A nurse fueling her minivan next to the taxi cab rushes to the victim's side. He will not survive.
It started over there. I went over there, and the guy's laying on the ground, blood all over the side of the van. He's laying on the ground, gasping for air, and the lady, she's standing there shaking. She was trying to help him.
25 minutes later, a little more than a mile away at Leisure World, a woman is murdered while sitting on a park bench in front of a post office. A witness to this shooting tells police he saw two men flee in a white delivery truck. Unbelievably, while the Montgomery County Police Chief and Deputy State's Attorney arrive at the gas station in Aspen Hill, the killer targets another woman at a Shell gas station on Connecticut Avenue in Kensington. Paramedics rush to the scene but cannot save the woman's life.
It's always shocking when you get a call like that at any point in time.
Shut up, Steve.
It's certainly not good when it's right here in your own backyard.
Investigators say they're all but certain the same gunmen are responsible for all five murders.
We strongly feel that all of these are connected.
I just want to say the weirdest part about all this is that there's a Jewish firefighter. You know?
Oh, yeah. Isn't that a little bit weird?
Jewish. I saw that. I was like, I don't believe it. Now there is a conspiracy.
Yeah,
this,
really.
This all
this
seems made up.
Is this story even real?
I know. It's all made up.
Investigators say they're all but certain the same gunmen are responsible for all five murders.
We strongly feel that all of these are connected. Certainly, the weaponry seems to be very similar. Not a lot of evidence. There's no indication at this point that these individuals know each other. There's no indication that any of these individuals had.
And this fucking guy. Know
he
each
said
other.
Weaponry and know each other.
Yeah, like this is DEI in action. This is the guy in charge of the investigation of tracking down the killers. So yeah.
Yeah, it's no wonder they thought he was white.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Kind of conflict with anyone.
The search for the killers, an all-out effort all across the region.
We have called in other resources. We have members of the Secret Service, FBI, Maryland State Police, Prince George's County. They're actually up with their helicopter. Members of Maryland Metropolitan Police Department and the state's attorney's office is actually here with us as well.
So, yeah, it was an all-hands-on-deck kind of an operation, given the very powerful and important people that live in that area. And obviously the severity of the crime, all those people being killed in such a short period of time. And to be honest, I bet the feds were wondering, is this something bigger than just some psycho? You know, like, are they target? Like, they had to find out, like, is there a connection between these people? You know, are any of these people federal employees? What's going on here exactly?
Yeah, and there was no connection between these people. He was getting people of all ages, races. None of them knew each other. It was from that day they knew that this was that these were totally unrelated sniper killings.
Right. So then,
go ahead.
I was going to say, so that's the third that was that aired on October 3rd, and then the next day, October 4th.
Yeah, he gets Carolyn Sewell. She's shot at 2:30 in a parking lot at a Virginia mall. Then Iran Brown. Hold on.
We got a clip from that. So this was this is from the 4th, October 4th, and this is Moose, Captain Moose or Chief Moose. That's really his name. So Chief Moose. The wheels are turning, and he's like, I'm starting to think these are all connected.
Listening now to Chief Charles Moose announcing that there is, in fact, a link between the Fredericksburg case and the cases.
The daytime
shooting. The D.C. case, that is, and the cases in Montgomery County. Let's listen.
Certainly, again, that is very disturbing. Gives us a wider window to work with, a higher degree of recklessness by these suspect or suspects. But again, we will work closely with MPD. We will maintain the lead on these situations. But again, very blessed to have the expertise that MPD brings to this situation and are very comfortable with that relationship.
All right. We're going to get him. Shit.
I think they would have caught him a lot earlier if it wasn't for this police chief.
Yeah. Well, and we'll tell you why here in a moment, too. Because it's not like they make it seem like you look at the coverage and it's like, oh, they slipped away again, these sneaky fucks. And what you don't know is in the background, they're actually trying to call the cops. and talk to them. And they were getting like hung up on and shit.
They were, yeah. And there was a tip that came through from Muhammad's friend where he called the tip line, was like, I am really sure that this is this guy that I know, John Muhammad, and that tip just got lost.
Yeah.
Did you hear the audio of them calling the cops?
No. I don't think I have that.
So Malvo calls the cops and he calls the Maryland Police Department. He's like, this is the sniper. And they're like, that's not really our department. Can you hang up and call the DC police? And he's like, what? And then they just hang up the phone and that's it. And that was around this time. This was before a lot of the fatalities too.
Yeah.
Just incredible police incompetence.
So you have, that they've, Captain Moose is putting it together. And then we have the next shooting. So this was the fourth, I guess.
No, it was 3 days later. This was the seventh.
But I mean, this, what we just played is the fourth.
Right,
and then, and then on the seventh, we have Iran Brown. And this is the first time a child was shot. This was
809. I thought you were going to play that clip.
I know. So I was like,
you're, like
you're just sitting there like, I'm going to play with my hair.
I know, right. Well, he actually came out and there was a news report that said that like they're not targeting children. So children are probably safe going to school. And that's when they decided to target this middle school, just to let everybody know that kids are not safe. So they shot this kid. I believe he was 13, and he does survive, but I think it went through his spleen and his liver. It really fucked him up.
Yeah, it did like a Charlie Kirk maneuver inside him after it hit him. So this is a news report from then.
We have breaking news right now. If you've been with us, then you know hundreds of police are looking for a sharpshooter who has struck again. His latest victim, a 13-year-old boy, is in critical condition, fighting for his life. And here is where it all started. Kids at Benjamin Tasker Middle School in Bowie, Maryland, were ushered inside this morning after that boy was shot just moments after he had been dropped off. Police spread out, going door to door, trying to find any possible witnesses. Today's shooting and its young victim are touching people in a brand new way, even bringing a police chief to tears.
But step on Moose. Shooting a kid.
Shooting a kid.
I guess it's getting to be really, really personal now.
That ain't cool.
Today's school shooting has now been linked with ballistics to the six shootings in Montgomery County, the one killing in D.C., and the shooting of a woman in Fredericksburg, Virginia. We have team coverage this evening, beginning with Fox 5's Bob Barnard live at Benjamin Tasker Middle School, where it all began. Bob.
Well, Tracy, you get the sense that Chief Moose knew before all we did that the killer was here again. His last two victims, the seventh and eighth victims, surviving his shots, but he took the weekend off and came to school on a Monday morning. He was here. We've got videotape to show you of the chaos outside Benjamin Tasker Middle School this morning. The shot fired at 8:09 this morning. There was utter chaos here because you had parents coming to the school wanting to get their kids out. Many did take them out throughout the day. And they didn't know. They suspected that perhaps this was the work of the same sniper killer, but they did not know until just now. School went on not as usual, but they kept all the students in their same first period classrooms throughout the day. Not a whole lot of work was done. What happened with the student was he was being dropped off here by his aunt just after 8:00 this morning. He got out of the car. The aunt apparently started to drive off, heard a gunshot, and turned around and saw her nephew leaning over. She got out of the car, and he was able to tell her that he believed he had been shot. She then put him in her car. She, being a nurse, drove him to Bowie Health Center, and from there he was then airlifted to Children's Hospital.
So that was that case. Now, one of the things I found funny about this was there was this one of these news reports tried to bring race into it. Even though like the shooter's black, the kid was black, and the way they tried to do it was they said, well, he was a black kid, and the only reason why his auntie, of course, definitely wouldn't be his dad, and where's his mom, who knows, but was taking him to school in the first place, was he was kicked off the bus for doing nothing at all. He a good boy. And he was just eating candy on the bus, and I'm sure. I remember all the kids when I was in school getting kicked off the bus for eating candy.
Yeah.
You know, like unless candy is like shorthand for cocaine, like I'm pretty sure that wasn't the problem. So there's this news report where they're like, oh, if they hadn't kicked him off the bus, he would have been saved. I'm like, well. Okay, let's just say you're right. Some other kid would have just been blasted anyway. You know what I mean? Like, so why does it matter? You know, they were going to shoot someone. They just picked him. But that kid should have learned his lesson. Next time, don't get kicked off the fucking bus for being a nig.
But yeah, anyway. Seriously. I wonder what he was doing. He's probably groping people, smoking weed.
Probably trying to harass white girls. And
yeah.
Yep. You never know. You never know. All right. So then you had that going on. Then, of course, the news was filled wall to wall with, like, because this was big time for the news industry. This was a big story. So you had, like, all these speculative stories that would just amp up the fear, quite frankly, in the community, being like, yeah, that's right. We don't have any more news on the sniper. So instead, we're going to talk about what the sniper probably does when he's looking for a victim.
Authorities believe the sniper is using a high-powered rifle that could target a victim more than 100 yards away.
Wow, what a bunch of super sleuths.
How far away that victim could be. But authorities say you must remember, this is an open field. The sniper is probably sitting inside a car.
He could be anywhere.
Behind a tree. In the event of another shooting, and you should be close by, authorities say you probably will not see someone running down the street holding a rifle.
You'll never see him.
These rifles can actually be broken down into small pieces and slipped into small bags like this.
It could be in his backpack.
So the person, the sniper, can get away without being noticed.
That's right. Suspect everyone.
Well, he just said that they were probably in a car. Why would they be walking around with a gun then?
In a backpack. But this was the kind of news, like wall-to-wall coverage of just like, also, snipers really hate babies. So if you got a baby, you better watch out because we've got this simulation on what happens when a baby is hit with a high-powered rifle. Go ahead.
It just explodes.
Set up the baby made of the ballistic gel and just blast the fucking baby. You see that baby just go, you know, totally vaporized? That could be your baby.
I hate these people so much. In the meantime, these guys are just running around indiscriminately killing people and the investigation is just shit.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that somebody even brought up a racial angle.
And they're like, and as you said, they thought it was white people because they're like, how are these experts getting away with it? There's no way with Captain Moose on the task that they'd be able to just slip away so easily every time that they do one of these shootings.
Right. So. Also, they could tell that there was a high degree of competence. So they just assumed, FBI profilers just assumed that it was a man in his late 30s or early 40s and that he was white. And at some point, somebody had called in a white van tip.
We'll get to that in a second. Because that actually does have another racial element to it. But we'll play it. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
But, this continued. And we had a couple days later. So that was the 7th was the last shooting. The 9th, you had Dean Harold Myers was shot at 8:18 at night while pumping gas at the Sunoco station. That was near Manassas, Virginia. So here's a news report about that. Let's make that a little bit bigger.
Well, a week ago tonight, the shooting spree began, and 7 days later, the callous killer may have claimed his 9th victim. Right now, police are on the scene of a deadly shooting with eerie similarities to the others. A man was shot dead tonight while pumping gas just outside Manassas, Virginia. It's located in Prince William County. Fox 5's Sherry Lee is live with more. Sherry, at this point, what can you tell us?
Well, Tracy, police are keeping us away from the crime scene right now. We are just about a half a mile away. The shooting actually happened just across 66 from us on 234. And right now we're told that there is a lockdown. Many people are in businesses and restaurants in the area. They are locked inside as police and FBI agents go through there trying to question people about what they saw and what they might have heard. Of course, the big question on everybody's minds tonight, is this shooting connected to the other shootings throughout the Washington metro area? This shooting happening at a Sunoco gas station on Sedley Road just south of 66. Police say a man was pumping gas just after 8 o'clock tonight when he was shot. Now, I spoke to one witness who said she was outside in the parking lot when she heard what she thought was a car backfiring. Within minutes, she said she saw police arrive and realized that what she had heard was a gunshot. Now, that witness reported a single gunshot, but police at this point are not confirming how many shots were actually fired. There is a large police presence here. They have closed off southbound 234 Sundley Road around the crime scene. Montgomery County Task Force members are on the scene looking for any connection to the other shootings. ATF agents are also here, and they obviously will be looking at the ballistics. Right now, they are interviewing possible witnesses, some who apparently reported seeing a white van leaving the gas station.
A white van leaving the gas station. Dun, dun, dun. Now, that wouldn't be the only report of the white van. We'll get to the other report of the white van later. But, yeah, they were looking for not the right vehicle, not the right people. They were ignoring the phone calls from the snipers as they were calling in to make demands, which were ridiculous, which we'll get into in a little bit here. And yeah, the murders continued.
Yeah, and I think it was around this point they were doing all of these stops on random vehicles. They had checkpoints, and they actually pulled over John Muhammad and Malvo in their blue Chevy Caprice. And they were like, oh, nope, it's two black guys and it's not a white van. So they let them go. They just let them go. They didn't invest. And then I think that at that point in time, they had the weapon and everything in the back if they would have looked. And also at this point in time, they had drilled out some kind of hole, a car hole to yep. shoot from. And so if they would have searched that car, they
just opened the trunk. Because they had gutted the whole trunk, and they had made it like an easy flap so that you could roll from being inside the trunk. You can just roll into the back seat. And so,
good Lord. So if they just opened the trunk,
it would have been so obvious. And then they had cut a hole in the back of the car so that you could push the gun. And it wasn't even like that unobvious of a hole. It was... When I saw the photos of it, it was like a pretty obvious slot that you would by where the license plate is that you would put the gun out at. So yeah, if the cops had looked at it at all, but instead
also,
they're like, "You guys are black."
I know, right? They're like, "Oh, it's fine. You're black. There's no way you could achieve this degree of competence in shooting because you're black."
Right.
And all serial killers are black or white. That the myth of the serial killers being white—that's really what allowed this to go on for so long. When he was buying the car, it was a used car, the Caprice, he was talking to the salesman. He's like, let me see that trunk. So he opened the trunk and then he gets into the back of the trunk. And then he's like, gets out of the back of the trunk and shuts it. And he's like, this will be fine. And then he buys the car.
It'd be funnier if he like got in the trunk and then he goes, pew, pew, like makes pew sounds. He's like, yeah, this seems about right.
Yeah, really. Like how the hell did nobody put two and two together and allowed this to continue?
Exactly. So this was, let's see here. Where are we at? This was the
2 days later,
the 9th. So next we have Kenneth Bridges. Kenneth Bridges was shot at 9:30 a.m. on October 11th while pumping gas at an Exxon off I-95 in the Spotsylvania County near Fredericksburg, Virginia. So we've got a little news report about that. Well, look, see, now you can tell. Now they're starting to make custom graphics for the story. Serial sniper team coverage, Fox 5. Tune in tonight for the Serial Sniper story. Serial Sniper.
No wonder people were freaking out.
9:30 Friday morning, another shooting, another gas station, another innocent victim dead. A father of six from Philadelphia. He had stopped at this Exxon gas station in Spotsylvania County to fill his tank.
Obviously, with a uniformed trooper directly across the street, obviously we're dealing with an individual that's extremely violent and obviously doesn't care.
And someone extremely brazen. Police don't know if this shooting is connected to the other sniper attacks, but this one happened just 50 yards from a state police officer investigating an accident. Police say he did not see anything, but some witnesses did. They describe a white van with a ladder top leaving the area shortly after the shooting. Some say a woman was behind the wheel.
And we're not certain if that van had anything to do with the shooting, but we do have a description of the people that were inside the van.
Searching for evidence, roads were closed, nearby businesses too. At times, marshals went door to door looking for witnesses who may have seen something.
I was just absolutely horrified, at what's happened here. This is something that has obviously put all of us here in the Washington metropolitan area on edge.
No shrub, no stone was left unturned. Police set up a large perimeter, calling in helicopters and bloodhounds.
We do have evidence. The evidence that we have has been collected. It's been turned over to ATF.
Hours after the shooting, the fear, the uncertainty, the tension remains high.
It's like living with terrorists, you know? You know, you never know when the next one's going to hit. It's frightening.
Dun, 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 dun. But that's really what it was, is everyone was like, you know, post 9/11, living in fear, we're going to be shot randomly for pumping gas. And it just continued from there.
Then he gave people a little break, a few days, keep them on their toes. And he shot this woman, Linda Franklin, in the parking lot of a Home Depot in Falls Church, Virginia. I don't know very much about the D.C. area, but it seemed like he was hitting all of the suburbs surrounding the city.
Yeah.
Okay. So he didn't do any inner city shootings.
No. Well, there was one. The super murder day. I think he got one in D.C. But for the most part, it was all Virginia and Maryland outside around the Beltway. The Beltway is, there's basically like a freeway that drives around D.C. because D.C. is, it's not like an island, but it kind of is. And on one side you have Maryland, like on the north side you have Maryland, and then on the south side you have Virginia. And so there's this big road that everyone commuting into the city has to drive on. It's called the Beltway. And then all along the Beltway is like all these little suburbs where people live. Mm. And so that's where they were hitting up. But he also traveled outside that zone a few times. The shitty thing about this one, Linda Franklin here, is she was actually she had just beat cancer. And they had just bought a house, she and her husband. They were going to be moving into the house like the next day. And so they were at Home Depot just getting some supplies. They opened the back of the truck or SUV so she can put something in it. She gets sniped and half her head is blown away. Like just imagine you're with your wife and you're like, "Hey, all right, honey." And then just like, boom, half her head's gone.
And John Muhammad, or it was Malvo, later stated that it was the husband that was the actual mark, and at the last minute, he changed his mind.
Right. So this is the story from that.
Linda Franklin was the mother of two grown children and a courageous fighter. She had recently battled breast cancer, undergoing a double mastectomy 8 months ago. She won that fight, only to be taken by a sniper's bullet.
Linda was a loving wife and mother who watched out for everyone in her family, and her loss will affect everyone.
It's a loss that hits home to the law enforcement community, too. Franklin worked for the FBI as a civilian intelligence operations specialist fighting cyber crimes.
Linda's family is shocked by the senseless loss of life and is calling on anyone with any information about...
Well, in 2002, that means that she was probably going after Nigerian scammers and child porn, but I don't know. FBI said, well, she probably just had a cubicle while the men around her went after Nigerian scammers and
it was a better time.
Yeah.
Contact law enforcement, the FBI, Fairfax County, whomever.
Friends say Franklin was at the Home Depot with her husband Ted Monday night, buying supplies for a move this Friday to a new house. Now the Arlington apartment the couple was leaving is a place where friends gather to grieve. And shock neighbors struggle to make sense of the senseless.
I burst into tears. I mean, it's too close.
Oh, it definitely was. It definitely hit home. Actually, after we found out it was our neighbor. Just hearing that it was down the street at Home Depot was shocking.
And at the Home Depot, candles and flowers now rest where Franklin was gunned down, a makeshift memorial for another innocent victim of the serial sniper.
All right. Now, this is where... You've already heard that they've been saying, oh, it's a van. So this guy here, Matthew Doughty, says he for sure saw the shooter getting into a white van. And this became like, oh, well, this confirms everything we've been hearing about white vans and stuff. And he's like, oh, yeah, this is like a Middle Eastern guy. And I saw him get in the van. And they ran with this, and that's what they started looking for. Turns out he made it all up because he wanted to be on TV. So, you know, it's like, how many different ways are black people going to fuck us over in this story? Well, yeah, that's yet another one.
Well, they should have scrutinized this position because they had already released all over the news that it was a white van. So anybody could go in and say, like, yeah, totally.
Right. So that just unfortunately, it confirmed their bias that, like, oh, it's a white van. Look, this totally honest-looking black guy told us that he saw the white van fleeing the scene. So, yeah, that was the 14th. And then on the 19th, we had some more cases.
Yeah, this is Jeffrey Hopper. He was shot and wounded at 8 p.m. outside of a Ponderosa steakhouse in Ashland, Virginia.
And this was actually kind of, it's funny because we'll play the clip here, but this was a very white part of the area. As you might have noticed so far, there's a lot of diversity in this area, mostly because, I don't know what, like when I first moved out there, I was just like, what the fuck is this place? Like, this is our nation's capital. Are you serious? Like you go to the mall and it's like no one's speaking English. And it's just like little mini groups. Like you go through like the food court, for example, in the mall. And it's like, oh, there's like a table of just Chinese people and a table of just Indian people and a table of just like it wasn't like diversity, you know, melting pot. It was like all these foreigners living in my country's capital and their own little, you know, cliques. And that's how that whole area is. And in fact, I think two of the people that got shot were Haitian, like refugees or some stupid shit like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just by huh. the, yeah, which, you know, obviously no okay. big loss. Yeah, okay. That's kind of makes up for some of it. But that's
wait, were they just shot or were they killed?
One of them for sure was killed.
Oh, okay. So that makes this a little bit easier to.
And maybe the other one. But that just goes to show you that a random sampling of people that they're shooting, two of them end up being like Haitian refugees or whatever. But that's how DC is all these people and a lot of black people after the Civil War, they were like, I want to go live in the big house with Mr. Lincoln. And so they all fucking seriously, that's what they did. So they all fucking moved up to DC and fucking ruined that fucking town. Like that town's so horrible. So
yeah, I've heard bad things. I haven't been there since I was a child, but I remember hating it.
It's horrific. It is horrific. And look, there's some super rich people and there's like really nice neighborhoods, but it's like, you know, you throw a rock, you're going to hit like a violent criminal, even if you're in one of those neighborhoods, if you have a good arm. So it's, that whole area has and that's the other thing too, is all the government employees, including, you know, Mr. Moose, right? Captain Moose here, a lot of the law enforcement is black. Everyone that runs the DC Metro, like everyone is black. You go into a post office, everyone's black. Any kind of government job, if you have to interact with any kind of bureaucratic, anything, they're all black, because that's, I mean, you know, they can't get like a real job. And so the feds were giving them, you know, just like the, oh, sure. Yeah. You can have this job where you do something that a machine should be doing and just stand here and stamp tickets for like $60,000 a year or, you know, what have you. So there's a lot of these people there. There's also, obviously, you can imagine, a lot of these refugees will show up in DC for the exact same psychological reasons. Like, I want to go live with Mr. Lincoln in the big house. The same exact thing. You know, they're going, oh, I'm going to go live with, you know, Mr. Clinton. I want to live by Mr. Clinton. He plays the saxophone. And so they end up in DC just fucking making the place a nightmare. So that's why there's so much diversity there. But this particular area was very white. And so everyone's very, it's kind of funny when they're interviewing them. They're like, ah, it's really weird. Like, they don't say it, but they're, you know, they're basically implying, like, yeah, we didn't think there'd be anyone getting shot here because of, well, you know.
It's a headline people who live around here never thought they'd see. Ashland shooting. But this is the reality setting in one day after a man was shot as he left this restaurant.
It's a very small, conservative town.
That's code for white.
Yeah, really.
It's a very conservative town.
Most of the other shooting sites, Ashland, Virginia, is located off a major interstate.
The town is mostly made up of the travelers.
But unlike the other places, it's a small, close-knit community of about 6,000 people.
We come up to Ashland real often to eat and shop in the stores and because it's convenient.
And far removed from the hustle of a big city and many...
And far removed from the hustle of the big city, in other words, black people.
Many thought big city crime.
Big city crime, black people crime.
Black people.
Until now.
And we just thought, oh, it'll never happen down where we live.
A shooting at a
Surprise, bitch!
popular town steakhouse. On any other day, the lots around the restaurants and other eateries would be full and businesses bustling. Now these favorite stops for I-95 travelers are largely empty. Customers replaced by a crush of media crews reporting on this latest shooting.
It's quite a scene. I mean, it's to be expected, I guess.
It's really been surprising, the breadth of this sniper's, where he's going and what he's doing.
But as concern and fear begins to take hold in Ashland, for some, the shooting is having another effect.
Well, it seems to affect it in a positive way, because smokers are nervous people, and they're coming in and getting more cigarettes.
Well, at least they're selling more cigarettes.
That guy really lost the human toll in all of this.
Yeah, this guy's like, well, on the bright side, we're really selling cigarettes. They're flying off the shelves.
But these you smokers, can't go outside to smoke them. You got to smoke them in your house.
They're very nervous people, you know, these smokers. And with all this, anything that heightens anxiety in the public really makes the business good. So.
Yeah, really. Explode more babies on TV so I can sell more cigarettes.
We can kind of thrive on this terror. Yeah. That's going on. So they start closing schools also because, up until that moment, a lot of Virginia thought maybe they were kind of immune to some of this. So Richmond, Virginia starts shutting down all their schools, which affects like, I think, over 100,000 students. So, I mean, it was like a serious thing. They didn't want kids getting shot at school. And it became like this kind of a big deal. And then it hits the net, you know, at this point, I mean, it was already kind of national news, but at this point now it's like the top story on the evening news every night.
Tonight's headlines, police finally reveal a specific sniper warning.
Your children are not safe anywhere.
Well, that's good. Hold on. Let's go to Moose. Moose, what's the situation with the... With the sniper thing. Well, I'll tell you.
Your children are not safe anywhere at any time.
Another.
Oh, that's good. Good to have a handle on it, Moose.
Another massive dragnet fails as another person is shot dead. Also tonight, the case against Martha Stewart.
Oh.
It may cost her more than you think.
That's nice. And Martha Stewart is going to jail.
Yeah, they totally railroaded her.
Well, it's funny, the shit that she went to jail for, basically
like
every member of Congress is guilty times a bajillion.
Compared to Nancy Pelosi, she did nothing.
Right.
Nothing compared to Nancy Pelosi.
Compared to the entire Trump family,
yeah,
she did
totally.
Absolutely fucking nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those people should basically be hung in the public square compared to what she did. So, it's like this... big story, and people are like, oh my God, what's going on? We got Martha Stewart going to jail, and we got this, your children aren't safe anymore.
Good evening. Among the new facts in the serial sniper case, there is this. With millions of people already living in fear, the situation just got a lot more frightening.
Oh,
after
good
keeping
Lord.
It secret for 3 days, the police admitted today they have received a specific warning, presumably from the killer, about children. Here are more of the latest facts. The police now acknowledge that part of the 3DO message is, quote, your children are not safe anywhere at any time. You recall the sniper has already wounded one school child. The police also say they've received another, newer message and will respond soon. All this comes as another person was shot dead today in Montgomery County, Maryland.
Now, what they don't tell you is the note that warned the police that your kids are not safe was scribbled on a piece of paper they found near where they think the sniper was shooting people from. I forget which crime scene. And they said that the English and handwriting was so bad that clearly it must have been some super smart white guy trying to trick them into thinking it was some dumb nig. Because there's no possible way anyone that wrote like this would actually be the one doing it.
Yeah, I know. It's just they just totally turned their mind off to any other possibilities, and it allowed all of these other people to be killed. And I do think that a lot of it has to do with this myth of the white serial killer. I mean, this was in 2002, but everybody thinks about Gary Ridgway, and Gary Ridgway was around this time, wasn't he? And then Bundy. And they just think that if you have a high level of competence in shooting, or if you are able to plan crimes, that you can't possibly be a black person. But black people are amongst the most prolific serial killers. Didn't Sam Little kill like 50 to 90 prostitutes or something?
Yeah. Yeah, they think it could even be like higher than that. They don't even know.
No one even talks about him. And if you consider that a serial killer is somebody that has killed three or more people, I mean, how many gangbangers are serial killers? Most serial killers are probably black.
Yeah, no, and not only just like the traditional kind of serial killers. There's the abortion doctor guy. Hmm. What's his name? Kermit Gronell or something like that. That had like when they raided his place, he had like refrigerators full of dead fetuses and all this other weird shit. Do you remember that guy? That case was like, I forget the case. But anyway, like this is the kind of, like if you count him, because he was illegally aborting, like late, I don't know, I'm talking about like just abortions. Like we're talking like fully formed baby extraction.
Kermit Gosnell.
Yeah, that's the guy. And it's in the hundreds, what that guy was doing. And he was literally just storing like dead babies, like in boxes and in coolers and shit like that.
He ran a prescription pill mill also.
No.
That's how I got caught.
That's good.
The sounds and sights of a massive manhunt jarred the suburban Washington community awake again. There was every sign that the sniper who began his deadly spree in this same neighborhood had returned. This time, the victim was a bus driver running through a checklist as he started his day. Today's attack took place almost 100 miles from the last killing linked to the sniper. A man walking to his car Saturday night after dining at a Ponderosa steakhouse in Ashland, Virginia. But it is within walking distance of some of the first crime scenes in Maryland's Montgomery County, where the deadly spree of sniper murders began 20 days ago. Once again today, the shooting took place near Woods. Within minutes, all traffic around the shooting scene was halted, a five-mile radius that included early morning commuters along the busy Capitol Beltway. Armed officers stopped all cars, not just white vans or trucks. It was after the Saturday shooting that a call came in which launched what appears to be a flurry of communication between the killer and police. The caller, a man, sent police to a tree in the woods behind the restaurant. A three-page note was tacked to the tree. Sources say it was poorly written with bad grammar and spelling. It demands money and made that general threat against the safety of children.
Ah, yes. I like how they didn't even find the note. He had to, like, call him and tell him where to go get it.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
And, the excuse that they use is that this was a wide-spanning murder, but murder spree, but it wasn't that wide-spanning. I mean, they didn't even know at this time that he had been on the other side of the country or been in the South. So it was, you know, why weren't these people communicating? It was 2002, not 1922.
Right.
They had the internet.
They had the internet, they had cell phones, they had the ability to, and look, they had a lot of cooperation because this is post 9/11, so they had a ton of money that was sent to all these law enforcement agencies in response to 9/11 and all these initiatives to, you know, make sure, especially in these kinds of cases where they thought maybe it was terrorism or whatever, they should have had access to like the highest level of you know, technology and and all you know expertise.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, it's funny because like you know they find the letter it's poorly written and then this listen to this guy.
Have the police picked up any other clues from the letter?
If they have, they aren't saying. We do know that when they found the letter where the sniper said it would be, forensics experts took an extremely long time to check the scene for other possible clues like fingerprints and fibers. They took so long, in fact, that by the time authorities actually read the letter itself, they discovered they were already behind the sniper's deadline to reply. It seems as if they've been trying ever since to get back in sync with the sniper's schedule, Dan.
It's like he tells you where to get the letter, and they're like, all right, we'll go get it. And then they don't even read it first. They're just like, all right, guys, let's lock down the area.
Wait, you're telling me that they just immediately, before reading it, sent it to forensics and then found out later?
Yeah, they didn't even read. Well, no, they didn't even get I don't even think they took it down from the tree. I think they spent so much time locking down the area and combing through that by the time they actually read the letter that was on the tree that they were told to go look at, it was like they were an hour past when they were supposed to respond to the sniper guy. So, yeah. And then, of course, he makes the same observation about it, you know, being written by a retard.
The FBI has assembled virtually its entire behavioral science profiling unit to work on the case. They're closely studying the language in the letter. The grammar is so bad, there's even some suspicion that English may not be the first language of the suspect. Investigators admit, however, that the sniper may be just trying to trick them into thinking exactly that. Dan?
Nope, he's just a dumb black guy. That's it. Come on, guys. Dude, they are overanalyzing the hell out of this case.
Yeah. So, yeah, they thought it was, you know, secret white guy that was super competent. You also had the issue I found when I was looking at these clips. Illegal immigration has been a problem in this fucking country for so long. And they've always, you know, they always use this excuse. This is when they were trying to normalize. They've been trying to normalize because, you know, white people have never wanted illegal immigration. And they try to characterize the problems that arise because of illegal immigration as an opportunity to frame it as, and that's why we should just give them all amnesty. You know, like, oh, there's a problem with illegal immigrants. Then maybe they shouldn't be illegal immigrants then. That'll solve the problem.
Stop committing crime. Then well, it's like people in our ranks committing crime.
It's like when it's like saying, oh, we have a murder problem. Then maybe we should just legalize murder. Then there won't be any problem anymore. Like, yeah. That's really what it is. And so in this instance, they're complaining because in D.C., it's not just all these randos from around the world. There are a ton of illegal immigrants in the D.C. area. And so they bring that up.
Police also say they want to hear from witnesses who may have information about Tuesday morning's shooting, but are afraid to come forward because they may be in the country illegally.
Montgomery County police officers do not have any authority or authorization to enforce immigration laws, and we want to talk to them about this crime.
This crime. Yeah, so they try to frame it like, oh, look, this investigation's being held up because of all you assholes that want to get rid of the immigrants. And Moose is like, don't worry, illegals. We are not going to kick you out for being in the country illegally.
Yeah.
You just have to tell us about the super secret white guys that are killing everybody.
In the meantime, it's an illegal immigrant perpetrator.
Right, right. And then this was kind of funny. You had mentioned this when we were researching the show, that one of their demands about the money.
Yeah. So these dumb black guys, they're like, how can we get this ransom money that we want? And they're like, we should tell them to put it on a credit card. I don't know how that would protect them from anything. I can't even get inside their minds why they thought this was a good idea, because can you even put $10 million on a credit card? No. And all of their subsequent transactions would be
tracked.
Documented.
Yeah.
So it's just like the dumbest plan possible. And they say in the ransom note, this poorly written ransom note, that we want $10 million so that we can open a school for disabled black boys in Canada. Like, what?
So that's the level of sophistication that we're dealing with.
All because one of them was a competent – well, they were both pretty competent shooters.
Right. Well, yeah, it's real hard to do point and click, right?
Yeah.
So this is him talking about, like, the cops were just kind of like –
Now, we're learning more this afternoon about what the killer has apparently requested of police in the letter that was found at one of the murder scenes. Fox News is reporting that the killer asked the police, in fact, demanded the police electronically transfer $10 million to a credit card account, that the killer provided police with a credit card number and a PIN number, but the credit card came back stolen, and so police either will not or cannot do what the killer has asked them to do. And Tracy, Fox News is also reporting that the killer says if his demands are not met, police will need body bags. And that's a quote. Back to you.
Oh, that is chilling, isn't it, Bob?
Chilling. Super chilling. Thanks, Bob.
What an idiot. That should have tipped him off that it was a black guy. No basic knowledge of finance. Like, come on.
Yeah, send $10 million to my, here's my PIN number.
Yeah.
To my stolen credit card. And the magic money will happen from the white people money system.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they eventually figure out who it is. As you mentioned, they had pulled someone over and found him and whatnot and all this other nonsense. Though they should have figured it out a long time ago, but they finally figure out by the 23rd who they are, and this is the news report. Once they know who they are, they know that now that they're not in a white van, they're not white people. And they put out this news report on October 23rd.
Dun, 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 dun. Sniper!
Want to recap our top story right now. Major developments in the search for the serial sniper. Police Chief Charles Moose gave us a name and a picture.
Moose!
But warned that the 42-year-old man is wanted for material information only at this point. In addition, there's a 17-year-old who's on the list of people police desperately want to talk to. And we have a new car to be on the lookout for, but this isn't something a witness saw. This car came from the hard work of the sniper task force. Let's go to Fox News' Will Thomas. He's live in Rockville with more on these major developments. Will, I don't want to put you on the spot, but maybe we can start a little bit with that quote that was so important to the sniper to hear from the mouth of Chief Charles Moose tonight.
Right. So many new developments. We're going to take you through it step by step. Why don't we begin with that cryptic message? Now, as we've seen the last several days, Chief Moose has used the airwaves to communicate with the person believed to be the sniper. Now, law enforcement sources tell us this so-called sniper, this serial killer, has attempted to call authorities several times and didn't get through. And so there does seem to be some type of phone tag happening. So the chief once again went before the cameras and urged this person to try again, to call or to write them. Let's listen to the chief himself to hear this message. Take a look.
We understand that you communicated with us by calling several different locations. Our inability to talk has been a concern for us, as it has been for you. You have indicated that you want us to do and say certain things. You asked us to say, quote, "We have caught a sniper like a duck in a noose," end quote.
What does that even mean?
We understand that hearing us say this is important to you.
Well, in the African American community, getting caught like a duck in a noose, it has a lot of importance because it's, I don't know.
However, we want you to know how difficult it has been to understand what you want, because you have chosen to use only notes, indirect messages, and calls to other jurisdictions.
Other jurisdictions. So, they put that out there, and they show pictures now. They finally have photos of the suspects and the description of the car. Of course, the picture they used was wrong color, but I guess they didn't have enough Photoshop time to make it the right color, as well as the license plate. And a white truck driver guy is at a truck stop when he spots the car at the rest stop, and he sees two nigs sleeping inside the truck or in the car. And so he gets his truck and he blocks off the exit to the rest stop so they can't get out, and he calls it in. And they finally get them into custody when they bring the SWAT team in.
A lot has happened in just the past 24 hours as the sniper manhunt literally went nationwide. It began
literally,
with
guys.
A task force phone tip from someone claiming responsibility for the sniper killings and a September shooting in Alabama.
So investigators headed to Montgomery, where they recovered a fingerprint from the shooting scene, a neighborhood liquor store. That fingerprint belonged to 17-year-old Lee Malvo.
Now, detectives quickly traced Malvo to a home in Tacoma, Washington, where he had lived with 41-year-old John Allen Muhammad. Investigators carefully searched the home early last night, removing a tree stump with bullet fragments in it.
The result, a midnight news conference. Montgomery County Police releasing a picture of a wanted man, John Allen Muhammad, as well as a description of a car.
A citizen spotted that car at a rest stop in Myersville, Maryland, just 60 minutes later. Inside, Muhammad and Malvo. An emergency response team took him into custody without incident.
We have team coverage tonight from one coast to the other. We begin with Fox 5's Bob Bonnard live at police headquarters in Rockville. What a day, Bob.
Incredible day, Tracy. We're still waiting to hear from Chief Moose. In fact, he hasn't said anything publicly about this morning's arrest. Police are obviously waiting for test results to come back on the rifle that was found in the car that the father and stepson were in to see whether if the test on that rifle matches with all the different sniper attacks. Under police escort and hidden inside this white trailer, the car from which a three-week-long killing spree may have been plotted and carried out. Inside the blue 1990 Chevy Caprice, police and federal agents recovered a Bushmaster rifle that fires 223 rounds and also seized a scope and tripod. Todd Easterday witnessed the search.
They were taking each thing out of the car, and somebody was cataloging it. One of the boxes was a real long box. Like, I'm not saying a gun came in it, but it looked like a box that you buy a gun in.
Arrested without incident around 3 o'clock this morning, 42-year-old John Allen Muhammad, also known as John Allen Williams, and his 17-year-old stepson, Lee Malvo. The pair found sleeping inside their car by a motorist who stopped at this I-70 rest stop west of Frederick, just an hour after Muhammad, Malvo, and their car were identified by police. What do you think of the fact that this may be over?
Oh, I hope it is. I really do.
I like how they found like some boomer tourist. She's got like the America t-shirt on. She's just like, well, golly, I'm just so happy to be in our nation's capital where they're capturing these black snappers. Yeehaw.
I really hope for people's peace of mind.
The rest stop just outside Myersville and the parking space.
I actually feel bad for, like, when I lived in D.C., I always felt bad for these people because I'd be walking around, like, going to work, and I'm, like, dodging, like, the fifth homeless guy that's screaming at me at the top of his lungs, trying not to step in his pile of shit, that like, literal human shit that's on the sidewalk, while some black guy is getting stabbed outside of McDonald's, and, like, you know, and while some other black guy is, like, with headphones on and doing a Michael Jackson impersonation while, grabbing at the purses of everyone who walks by. And you'd see, like, this woman here who'd never been to D.C. in her life. You know, her whole life, this was, like, you know, very patriotic. She's somewhere from, like, the Midwest. And she shows up expecting to see, like, the Jefferson Memorial and the Washington Monument and, like, the reflecting pool. And all she's ever seen of D.C. is, like, these images from, you know, movies where they've kind of swept all the homeless people into the corner so they can do the beauty shot or whatever. And they're just horrified as they, like, walk down the sidewalk, through the noise and the chaos of D.C., trying not to get mugged. You know, especially when you go into, like, the gift shops, like, where they're selling, like, bobblehead George Bush or whatever the fuck. And it's just, like, people that don't even speak English running the register. And it's just, like, fucking nonsense. But anyway.
Well, good. I hope it's a wake-up call. Welcome to the nation's capital, bitch.
Yeah. Well, part of me feels like they're just, like, it's so beautiful how all these people can come together in one nation.
Probably. Yeah. And they go home and tell everybody in rural Georgia what a wonderful time they had.
It was one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all races.
Peace of mind.
The rest stop just outside Myersville and the parking space where the suspect's car was parked, an immediate tourist attraction.
Fucking looky-loos.
And she has a disposable camera.
Yeah. with her Maryland, her Maryland, she's probably a tourist too. She's wearing a Maryland sweater.
Oh, yeah.
And so she's like, oh, I'm going to tell, I can't wait to tell Janet. Janet, back at the Harris place, I saw the murdering Negro's parking space. Look at that. It's not, the car's not there anymore. They'd already hauled it into the back of the truck, but I swear, it might just look like any old parking space, but that's where the murdering Negroes were. They had slept there, and I was there, Margaret. I was there. You weren't. You said it was stupid to go to D.C. It was going to be too cold this time of year, and you didn't want to go, but I went, and I got to see the murder parking spot. And that's like the most exciting thing that's ever happened to her.
Oh, yeah. Tourist attraction.
Just had to have a look, I guess, so drive by to see it.
Maryland State Police cadets on their hands and knees helped investigators look for other evidence at the rest stop. The car, with the world watching, taken to a secure location.
I like how they just smack, they see when they're rolling it in, they just ram it into the corner. Yeah. They're like, all right, Bill, you got this? I got it. With the world, all right, watching, this is very important evidence. Oh, fuck, damn it.
For further examination.
I'll just pretend that didn't happen.
Two men, whose names and faces we'd never seen or heard before, may forever be known as two people who instilled fear in a community of more than 2 million. 14 shots, 13 hits, 10 killed. And their car was spotted around 1 in the morning, just about an hour after Chief Moose came before the cameras last night around midnight. But the men weren't taken into custody until a little after 3:30, and that is because after Maryland State Police came to confirm that it was their car, they put a perimeter around the rest stop, they called the task force, they mobilized SWAT teams, they got up there, they woke up Mohammed and Malvo and put them under arrest. Tracy, back to you.
All right, Bob, thanks so much. You know, we have watched as police have pulled over dozens of white vans and trucks over the past 3 weeks. Well,
for no reason.
Well, today, yeah, ironically, really, it was the driver of a white truck who spotted Mohammed's car at that.
Who would have thought? The whole time he thought it was a white guy that was doing this, it was a white guy that saved the day.
That Maryland rest stop and called police and then blocked the exit of the rest stop with his truck.
I know, hero. I just want people to think what I did was what I should have done. I'm no hero at this. No hero whatsoever. I don't even want him.
I'm definitely not a hero. I don't want no one thinking I'm some kind of fucking hero. Over
yeah,
I just,
really.
Just make
this
sure.
This is why you should think I'm a hero.
Just make sure that when you report this, you do not say I'm a hero. Because I'm not a hero. I'm a lot of things. But I'm not a hero. I'm just a man. Did the right thing. What a hero might have done. But not a hero. Not personally, I'm not a hero. Any hero would have done the same thing I did. So, yeah, they caught him, and that was that.
Well, I guess we should talk about why they did this.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so there's a lot of speculation that John Muhammad did this because he wanted to create a trail of random murders so that it could end with killing his second wife, Mildred, and that he could take the $10 million to take his kids out of the country. So much of the news coverage was like, he was such a loving and devoted father, and that's all he cared about. I'm like, okay. And a lot of the news coverage, too, talks about how he was in Desert Storm and that traumatized him and he might have had brain damage from chemical exposure. It's like, can't we just admit that Black people commit more crime? That they're just more criminal? Do we have to look for all these reasons?
Yeah, they don't have to go to the Middle East to get brain damage. You know, like, they kind of come that way.
Yeah, yeah, you exactly.
You don't have to go through the extra effort.
Just racial stereotypes out the wazoo. With Malvo, you know, being raised by an abusive single mother and looking to this other abusive Black guy as a father figure. They even called him a stepson. That's not accurate. He was just some guy. Like in one school that he enrolled him in, he put that he was his father. And that's where all this comes from in the news coverage. But I don't know. There's not a lot of...
That's a little weird, too. Like, how did that all come together? Like, he just went to Jamaica and, like, took him home with him? Like, what? I don't understand like that, how that worked out.
Yeah, basically. I don't think his mother cared about him very much. And so he was like, I'm taking this kid. And by that age, he could make his own decisions. So Yeah, but he was
in the country illegally at first, at least.
Yeah. So. So it looks like he claimed ownership to some degree of Malvo. But I mean, he was old enough that this unwitting accomplice thing, it's not really flying. But that is why he didn't get the death penalty, although John Muhammad did, and he was executed in 2009. So
that's crazy. What state did the execution? Virginia?
Probably. I'm not sure, but I bet it had to be Virginia because they didn't even charge him for the murders in Washington or
Maryland.
The southern states. Yeah. Let's see, John. I will look it up now. Execution. You just
Virginia would be the only state that I would know that that would have
Virginia.
That would still do the death penalty. Yeah.
Lethal injection. Yeah, he maintained his innocence till the end, but Malvo talked and admitted to all those other crimes.
Good old Malvo.
Yeah, it's just an incredible blunder by so many police officers and by that police chief. It's like he couldn't read those letters and be like, oh, this is Ken. He's just pretending to be an illiterate black man.
You would think that he would read it and be like, oh, this sounds like Uncle Ramus.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe that's why you couldn't tell, because to him it just looked like normal writing.
Yeah, really.
He's like, everyone keeps saying that this is written poorly, but I don't see what the problem is. This looks exactly like my police reports.
I think to date, this was the worst mass shooting event.
Yeah.
How many people were killed in Columbine?
That's a good question. Well, that's the thing. This was a serial. Well, I don't know if it's a, because the only mass shooting was the day of, I guess, where they did the super shooting. And so it's cumulative, but on the, like on the third, that's when they had the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in right. one day. So, yeah.
Well, if you combine all the murders, this is more than Columbine.
Oh yeah. No, especially if you combine the ones beginning with the girl or the lady they shot in the face in the first day and all the people in between. And, so there's several that, as you said, they never even got charged with, and there's possibly even more. You know, how would we know? There's a lot of these cases that where if they're just shooting people at random, who knows how many that they actually did. I don't think they were copping. You know, I don't think they were admitting to any of this stuff. So
that is the story of an illegal immigrant black guy being a mass shooter, and somehow they still managed to blame it on whites. And if they had done a proper investigation with the first murder, none of these people would have been killed.
Absolutely. All right. So I guess it's time to go to Super Chats. You want to tell people about our sponsor before we do that?
Sure. We've got a sponsor. Do you want me to read this, or are you playing your little video?
Oh, no, I didn't make it one today.
Oh, okay. All right. Antelope Hill Publishing is the premier American publishing house for informed and principled political dissidents. They publish essential authors like Dr. Kevin MacDonald, David Irving, Carrie Bolton, and Dr. Ricardo Duchesne, Josh Neal, who I've interviewed, and more. Their catalog includes original works on modern issues like the opioid crisis. I'm illiterate too, and the people and networks pushing transgenderism, as well as original historical sources from National Socialist Germany, Fascist Italy, Spain, Britain, Japan, Hungary, many available in English for the first time exclusively through Antelope Hill. Their catalog also includes thrilling fiction novels and beautifully illustrated and wholesome children's books. Whatever your interest is, you are sure to find something that you want at Antelope Hill Publishing. Check them out. Support our friends and our sponsor and use the code OUTLAWS for 10% off your order, and I have that link below in the description. Thank you so much, Antelope Hill. I can't believe that we have a sponsor. It's so much shocking. They're the best. Yeah.
And I would have made another song. I was thinking that'd be a cool thing to make it, maybe a different thing each time so it doesn't get boring. Or maybe not every time, you know. But I have Jew AIDS right now. So,
how did you acquire Jew AIDS?
I don't know. Must have been a Jewess. a very sexy desert Jewess or something.
Totally. You haven't been visiting those Hasidic Brooklyn Shamrim bathhouses.
The desert Jew brothels. maybe I got a bris. That's what happened. Oh. I had my foreskin bitten off and, you know, contracted the Jew AIDS that way. I don't know. That was too much. This has taken an unfortunate turn.
This has just turned into JF mummy sex.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good Lord. Get your last minute super chats into my channel. That is Blonde on the Belly of the Beast. Also, is Entropy down?
It wasn't.
Maybe over on Devin's Rumble, Blackpilled on Rumble. You can also donate to our Subscribestar, which is linked in the description below, or to PayPal, which is also linked in the description below. Thank you so much. Do you want to start? You want me to start?
Either or.
Well, that doesn't help me at all.
How about I do the entropy ones? Let me just
okay, sure.
Refresh entropy. Oh, it did go down, but we have some before it went down. So let me see here. The entropy. I don't know why it does this. It predictably does this, though.
Okay.
Actually, it didn't go down, but it logged me out, which is not as bad as it going down. Okay. So we got Simbi. Simbi says, question for Rebecca. How does one sponsor an Outlaws episode? What is the pricing for an ad per episode? Well, that's probably something you should probably DM. I don't think that's like a super chat question, which yeah, I told you, Simbi, by the way, when you asked the same thing.
An email, blondeandthebellyofthebeast@gmail.com, and we can discuss it.
So there you go, Simbi. And then we got, but thank you for the support, Simbi. Big supporter of Outlaws and the Insomnia Stream, Simbi's. Friend of the show, Simbi. Then we got a really generous dono from Every Single Time.
Every single time.
Says, thanks, Rebecca and Devin. You're two of the best doing this. Day of the Rope showed up today, Devin. Looking forward to reading it this weekend. Saw the news about Irina's killer earlier. Totally unrelated. But do either of you think you'll see lynch mobs in time? I don't personally think that'll ever happen. Unfortunately, I think people are too domesticated.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've talked about this. I'm a repeat storyteller. It's like I'm getting dementia. But I thought that we would until the Molly Tibbetts thing happened, and then you know her dad did a whole, you know, diverse array of restaurants spiel and took up a donation for illegal immigrants at her funeral. And after that, I was like, oh, we are fucked. There is going to be no public lynching. But I don't know. I mean, don't you think that there's a point where people are like, they have to push back? Although if getting your daughter getting raped and murdered by an illegal immigrant isn't that point, I don't know what possibly could be. I have hope for lynch mobs.
There is a point. I just think that it's much further from where we're at. Because if there's anything that you should learn from watching both this show and the Insomnia Stream is that this isn't new. Like, white people have been subjected to the dangers of diversity for over a century. And while they're used to, you know, people used to boil over occasionally, if anything, it's gotten less as the violence has increased. And part of that is, I think, it's people are just lazier generally, you know. The calories are easier to come by. There's more entertainment. Yeah, think of it this way. People used to be, I mean, a lynching might have sounded like a really fun thing to do if you hadn't done anything like entertaining for like a week. You know, that might have been like the most interesting thing to go do. That's like getting invited to a party, you know. But if instead you can just sit in your room and play video games all day and think about how much you don't like diversity. And you know, like, that's unfortunately, that's really what happens, is people will be perfectly happy to eat a Hot Pocket and be like, freaking nigs. And then they, you know, they play Fortnite or whatever, you know, and that's the end of it. And I think that's how a lot of that stuff gets channeled. And look, and not only that, a lot of it is too, when you had these kind of lynchings take place, it was a community effort. It was, it wasn't like today, at least in the communities I've lived in my lifetime. My dad, we moved around a lot when I was a kid. And so, I mean, in fact, in elementary school, it was horrendous. I almost went to like a different school every year. And so I was having to like, you know, I was always having to like learn everyone's names all, you know, from scratch and try to create like some kind of sense of belonging. And then like, oh, dad got another job, you know, oh, great. Now we're going to live over here. But then I kind of followed that same tradition. I was chasing dollar signs and I would move across. You know, the reason I lived in Rockville for a while, for example, is because I got a job in Rockville. I'd never even been to Rockville. And so, I was just going to, and that's how a lot of people post-boomer really that's what they've done because of the job opportunities being what they are. And because mass transit has made it easier and the internet's made it easier, a lot of people do they throw their resume out on, you know, not Monster anymore, but like, you know, whatever these websites are, and they get a call from some place across the country that's going to pay them a little bit more and give them maybe a little more of a career boost, they'll do it. And so you end up with these people who are just completely deracinated because of that. You know, that you're not, it's like when you had like a lynching before, it's because to us, we're mad that Arena got killed, and partially because we've seen video of it. And we saw a video of the black people on that train, not even like helping her out after she got stabbed. We saw a video of him saying, "I got a fucking white bitch," or whatever the hell it was that he said. We saw the horrific crime, but it's not, we don't know her. She's a refugee, in fact, from another country. And not that that makes it any better, but what I'm saying is, if that had been my cousin, you know, like, cause yeah. I'm not out there lynching the guy right now either. Right. Neither are you. But mm-hmm. if that had been my cousin, I don't think he would have made it out of the courtroom. And I think that's the difference too, is when these crimes used to happen, it would happen in these communities where the victim wasn't just like, oh, white girl on TV. It's like a girl you knew, like you went to school with her.
Went to high school with her. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like she borrowed a pencil from you. But we should
have enough white unity that we see something like this happen and we do it anyway.
We should, but we don't. And that's the thing is, I think it's going to take a long time to really create that in-group preference that is, I mean, the lack of that in-group preference is why we're in this position in the first place. And so just because we happen to be the outliers with high in-group preference and we're the ones that are outraged, there's a lot of people who aren't. And you could say, you know, well, that mayor that wanted to take down the mural of Arena, like that was a Jew, and it's true. But I bet there's a whole lot of white liberals that were in favor of that.
Oh, yeah.
And so you don't have – white people don't act like a monolith in the same way that other races do, and they won't until all those people with bad – with low in-group preference, they breed out, they mix, or they get killed because they trust the black guy sitting behind them on the train or, you know, whatever. You end up with a hardened – you know, these selection pressures will create a hardened high in-group preference group of whites, and because anyone that has low in-group preference, they won't be white in like three generations. You know what I mean?
Right. And as a necessity comes to be the norm, and I think that we will witness that era in our time. People are going to behave differently. They're going to behave more erratically, and they'll have to establish some sort of in-group preference. And I think that will be racial. I mean, I'm hopeful that things will change within our lifetime.
Right. I hope so, too. I think this is the kind of thing that we prepare our kids for. This is the kind of thing that, because a lot of it, too, is As much as his behavior is genetic, we've spent a lot of time talking about that. And it is. You also have to overcome programming to some extent. You know, obviously, I've spent a lot of time talking about the messages in movies and in commercials. Propaganda obviously has an effect. And so you have to, like, think of it this way. If you raise kids that don't have to unlearn all the diversity is our strength propaganda that probably you and, you know, you and I certainly, and I'm sure you, Rebecca, as well, we grew up being told that, you know, that this was like, this grand experiment was like so great. And America, one of the reasons why America was the best country in the world was because of all these nigs running around. And, you know, when the opposite was true. And so I think that if you raise children that don't have to unlearn all this this Jew mind poison, you're going to have people that have that are much more well equipped to make the kinds of decisions, like by selecting communities, by joining communities, by being part of a group that would have some kind of resistance to this.
Yeah, and this is an unpopular opinion because I know a lot of people in the sphere, they're like, no media exposure for children because they'll get propagandized. But I allow exposure for Emmeline, my 5-year-old, and then I walk her through it. I think we talked about the AIDS commercial. Did we talk about this already?
I don't think so.
On Amazon Prime, there's this commercial where this it's for an AIDS drug, and this bisexual black guy is like getting the AIDS drug. So my daughter is always asking me questions about this. And so like, I tell her like, these are minorities that engage in bad life practices and it gives them a fatal disease. And then I tell her like why this is propaganda. So I walk her through this because you have to equip your kids to be able to recognize propaganda, because whether or not you want them to be exposed to it, they're going to be, and you better be at the helm there giving them the tools to know how to deal with this. So I will allow her to, under supervised conditions, be exposed to some propaganda, but I always point it out. And then on her own, this is a few weeks ago, she's like, Mommy, why is that black man married to that white woman? Is this propaganda? And I was like, yes, yes, I'm so proud of you. But now she's developing the tools to be able to pick it up on her own. And that's very, very important. Did you ever know any people growing up, I'm sure you did, that were incredibly sheltered? Like I knew some Mormons that were like this. And then they would have like a friggin' Rumspringa once they were exposed to this stuff and just become like wildly promiscuous or whatever. Americans do it with alcohol. Like Europeans, I think that they're better with alcohol exposure with their kids from a younger age. Like I really believe that if you can have some of these exposures in a controlled environment, that you're setting them up for adulthood to be able to deal with these things. Like I don't think that you should keep them in the dark about some of these exposures that are inevitable.
Right. I think so often, and in fact, this includes a lot of my relatives that were Mormon and homeschooled, because they, you know, Utah Mormons especially, because they lived in a whole state that was kind of sheltered. And it created these very naive, good, I mean, don't get me wrong, really good people. And it's a shame that they couldn't keep living in a society like that. That's kind of like the goal, I guess, eventually. But you have these very naive people, not unlike that Brendan Fraser movie where he's like locked in the bomb shelter. And then he goes out into the 90s and it's like he's encountering like, you know, all this degeneracy and doesn't know how to react to it. You know, there is something to be said about low dose immunity, you know, giving people an understanding of what they're dealing with. Otherwise, as you said, they will just go crazy. But also you don't want to go the other way with it either, where you tell them like irrational, stupid things like, oh, all black people are evil. Well, they're not.
Right.
And as soon as they meet a nice black guy. Right. Yeah. They'll meet one nice black guy and be like, oh, well, my parents were just evil racist. They were lying to me. And they'll start banging black guys. So
Exactly. It's a fine line here. You really have to walk a tightrope as a parent and try to do the right thing. Because you also don't want your kids to overcorrect and to not listen to anything that you say. And I think that one of the most important things for teenagers to not do that, although my kids are young, so it's hard for me to say this, is for them to have respect for their parents. And if they respect you, they'll believe you. So keeping that respect going, I think is really important. But what do I know? My kids are 5 and 2.
Well, and I'll tell you, lying to your kids, well, that they'll lose respect for you real quick.
Yeah.
The reason I started smoking pot when I was like 14 was because my parents, the way they characterized smoking pot was like the way it was described in Reefer Madness. And I had friends that smoked pot, and I knew that wasn't true. So I just was like, well, they just don't know. They're dumb. Like, either they're lying to me or they're just, you know, sheltered Mormon kids that never did it. So now what else are they lying to me about? I guess I'm going to try I'll have a beer. I guess I'll have this Captain Morgan's or whatever. And so that's really what set
Captain
me.
Captain Morgan.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
One of the commercials, there's a captain in you or whatever. There's. Do you ever drink Goldschlager? Is that still a thing?
Oh, yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, I haven't drank in like 15 years, but it used to be a thing.
But yeah, but that's my point, though, is like we used to, I mean, because it wasn't just me. It was like me and these other Mormon kids that also were like, oh, our parents are liars. And we ended up being like kind of hardcore partiers as a result. Whereas I think that if you mentioned the European thing, like if I don't think you have to like have wine with your kids necessarily, but if that's I think that a lot of Americans that were like, oh, that's crazy, it's like, no, it actually makes them it makes it less of a taboo, you know. It makes it less of a mysterious I'm gonna try some wine.
And I think what parents should do, especially about weed, because it seems innocuous, is just to be like, you don't want to do this because it's bad for the developing brain and because it makes you lazy and stupid.
Like, tell them, it's fun. It's fun. People wouldn't do it if it wasn't fun. But do you want to be retarded just so you can have a little fun?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure, like, huffing, you know, like, NOS is fun, too. Or people wouldn't do it. But it'll make you a fucking retard.
Yeah.
So.
God knows what my IQ is now versus what it was before. I probably lost, like, 6 IQ points. I'm probably a standard deviation lower because of all the weed I smoke.
Right. I don't even want to know. I don't even want to know.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Don't think about it.
But thank you very much there every single time. Then we have Codfish Killer. Codfish Killer says the low IQ option is the only one that has ever worked. The smart people always let them back in. Line go up. To be clear, kick them out. Hold on. The low IQ option is the only one that has ever worked.
I don't
worked.
Understand this. Am I low IQ?
I don't know either. The smart people always let them back in. Line go up.
Is he talking about the over analytical nature of the leftist elite?
I don't know. I don't know, Codfish Killer.
Sorry, bud.
Yeah, I don't know what line goes up. But I mean, look, I hope you're not suggesting there's not a high IQ way of looking at this. I think it's very high IQ to not want foreigners with a much lower IQ and just, you know, a lot of other biological differences in your midst. It doesn't make any sense. You know, like there's no reason to have people like this in your society. Or like in the case of the Arena case, that guy, I guess it came out today, they're saying that he's not competent to stand trial or whatever. Then we should just execute him.
Yeah.
You know? And
easy peasy.
Yeah, that's not a low IQ response. That's a high IQ response. What you want to, I think what maybe you're worried about is midwit IQ. So that is the people who overestimate their ability, their intellectual abilities, because they're smarter than some people. And so they assume because they're smarter than, like people like the blacks that we're talking about, that makes them into some kind of turbo genius. And it's like, no, you only think you're smart because you're surrounded by Mexicans.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Then we got Rivers of Blood says, fitting for the show theme, you should look into the life of Hannah Dustin. She was a colonial era woman who has the distinction of being the first woman on the U.S. soil, having a statue erected in her honor. Shitlibs want the statue removed because she was an engine killer. All mothers could be so based. Hannah Dustin.
I know a lot of people that don't. It's so stupid. They're like, I don't take audience suggestions because I don't want it interfering with my method. I'm like, that's so retarded. Like, we have this pool of incredibly smart people that were right. like blessed listen to us, and they have all sorts of good ideas. Like, obviously, every time one of you suggests something, I put it in the show notes and I revisit it when we're choosing topics. So please send me your suggestions. I mean, we do listener topics all the time.
You want to see a picture of this based Hannah Duston statue?
Is she really, really ugly?
No, it's actually pretty based, though.
Okay, cool.
All right, so this is... look at that. She's got a hatchet. Hey. She's an engine killer. I feel like I have talked about her, though. Like, I feel like this engine killer woman came up at some point in time when I was talking about the savages.
Olive Oatman,
but yeah, that's that kind of a story, though. I'll have to look into it, but yeah, that's pretty cool.
That episode was peak Black Pill. That was such a good episode.
The Olive Oatman one?
Mm-hmm.
She is based, or was. All right, then we got, close the thing here. A super generous dono. Like, record-breakingly good, I think, from Dutch Roberts. Dutch Roberts. Good evening, Devin. Blonde, long-time replay gang. Probably 17 to 18-ish time frame. Talking about 2017, 2018. I dig this new time slot. First time dono. I pirated all your music, Devin, so I figured recompense was in order. I was also a metalhead, but I've come to really like some electronic and synth stuff over the years. Oh, look at that.
Well, that's so awesome.
I appreciate that, Dutch Roberts. Yeah, old school pill popper and blonde fan from the 17 to 18.
Dude,
that's almost 10 years.
So long. Don't make me think about it.
That's almost a decade.
I consistently get along with metalheads. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's this like this Gen X kind of counterculture vibe, or maybe it's just that they were able to not adopt the propaganda and they're a little hardier to it. But I also like metal, so.
Well, I would say when I was in high school, I would ping pong between different groups, but definitely one of the core groups was the metalhead, like biker types that listen to like Slayer and shit. And honestly, the weird thing when I'm thinking about it, they were politically very conservative and kind of racist. So that's why.
Well, who did you listen to?
I didn't see, they used to make fun of me because I liked stuff like Korn, you know, and they were like, new metal sucks, you know, and they would listen to like Slayer and, yeah. I don't even know the names, but like the stuff that to me just sounded like growling, you know, with a really fast drum beat in the background.
Oh, Slayer's awesome though.
And so, I don't know. Maybe they are. I just never got into it. Like, you know, I was always into the electronic stuff, and I was a little wiggery a little bit. I used to listen
just
to some.
Touch.
Yeah, used to listen to like some Wu-Tang shit and things like that. So.
That was all old school by the time I was in high school.
Yeah, I'm an old man.
I thought I was crazy.
But, metalheads are usually pretty good people. I don't think there's a lot of, maybe there are. There's probably lefty metalheads.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess so.
There's lefty everything, right?
There were a lot of lefty Tool fans. That is true.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, thank you very much there, Dutch Roberts, although Tool also would not be metal. That's like progressive metal or something. They have all these fucking subcategories and subgenres I don't even know. All right, then we got Coincidence says the 1973 oil crisis was the result of a Jew war. Thought people should know this for context of our current situation. Also, who is the leader and who is the sidekick here? Either way, I am kindly requesting this small donation be distributed between you in accordance with your gender pay gap. All right. We are equals here.
This is an egalitarian relationship.
That's right. Here at the Outlaws, we are both outlaws. But thank you very much there, Coincidence.
I'll and, put that in the notes too. Maybe there's something there.
Something with the with coincidences?
No, with the oil crisis. That's 1973.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, that definitely was Jew Wars. All right, that's all the entropy ones. You want to check out YouTube over there?
Sure. All right, from General Grievance, new children's book idea for Devin. If you give a black a gun, Mr. Stack, looking good as always. Blonde, how's it going? I see what you did there. No beta bites for me today. I appreciate it. Thank you, General Grievance. Righteous Muffin, a big donut. We really appreciate it. Good evening to you both. Replay gang here. Entropy and YouTube messed up for me. I don't know why. YouTube, that was my fault. Thanks for the collab. This is for both of you because I love what you guys are doing. I'm sure this will be another great stream. Did she meet your standards yet, Devin? Don't answer that. If there are like a few people, actually, it's just really you and Cameron, that if I ever met your disapproval, it would be so upsetting to me. So just lie to me if I'm ever disappointing you. Don't tell me. I can't handle it. My woman brain can't handle it.
My silence will speak volumes.
No. Thank you, Righteous Muffin. We really appreciate it. Troy says, you make my Wednesdays so much better. So do you. You make our Wednesdays so much better, Troy. We appreciate it. Destined to be different. Thanks for what you do. Thanks for what you do by donating to this show. Big A. I believe I've discovered what nursing home scandal the rabbi referred to last week. Philip Esform was a nursing home mogul who was sentenced to prison for Medicare fraud. Trump pardoned him. Didn't you mention that if there was something, Trump probably pardoned him? Didn't you say that?
Oh, no.
Show?
So, that's probably another – that's the funny thing. That's probably just another Jewish scam with nursing homes. Because the clip that I played, I listened back to it. He said 40 years ago.
Oh,
so it's,
okay.
So it's a Jewish scam that's probably 50 years old because that clip is like, I think, about 10 years old. And so Jewish, you know, Jews scamming nursing homes, I think, is just like one of those things they do. So there's probably plenty of cases, but including the one. Yeah, Trump has pardoned a bunch of these people that are just Jewish scammers. And oh, by the way, did you see the thing about his – you know, we've talked about Paula White being a fucking nutcase.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see it? That was a great stream, too.
But did you see his former spiritual advisor?
Was it worse?
It's worse.
How?
He went to jail for banging a 12-year-old, and they only gave him 6 months, and he just got out.
What?
Yeah, let me see if I might have had the clip. I think I might have sent it to you. Maybe I sent it somewhere else. Let me look. No. Where did I send that? I thought I'd... Oh, I sent it to myself, I bet. Let's see here. Former... Yeah, his name is... Wait. I retweeted it, so it's on my timeline. Give me a second here. But I checked it out. It's true. This is... The former spiritual advisor is, here it is. Let me download the, let me download it. People won't be able to hear it unless I download it.
Do you want me to read some more?
Yeah, I'll get that okay. Ready.
Al Kema said, Devon, can you look into the death of Shoshana Strook? I will put that in the show notes. Thank you for that. Maddie Ice, have you guys ever heard of the Community Relations Service? It's an office underneath the DOJ. They would have traveled to Tibbetts' dad and told him what not to say. They don't have to keep notes. I've heard about this before. I don't doubt it. But, you know, if your father is towing the line after your murder, he's a piece of shit. I mean, you got to be like, I'm not saying any of this stuff. But apparently they do that after... any high-profile murder or act of violence committed by a minority or an illegal immigrant. Thank you so much, Maddie Ice. I appreciate it. All right, let me reload here.
In fact, Amran has a good article on that. It's very secret. So Jews during the Civil Rights Movement created that part of the DOJ there, and it's all very secret. They don't have to publish what they're doing. I don't even know if their budget is like like, no, it's very insulated, so there's no way to look inside. People have tried doing Freedom of Information Act requests. They get denied, but they literally intimidate people that are the victims of black crime into not pointing out that they're victims of black crime. And, I, as you said, that wouldn't stop me. You know what
no,
I mean?
Me neither.
Like, if my daughter got raped and killed by an illegal immigrant, I wouldn't just be like, oh, well, you know, the DOJ said that it's going to create racism, so I better not say anything about it.
No.
You know, and I don't even care if they threaten me. If they were like, oh, you're going to, you know, we'll prosecute. Because I don't know, maybe they do stuff like that.
Who cares? I think she was the only daughter. It's like your only daughter. What's the point? Avenging her death should be your only mission in life. I would go out in some sort of pitchfork mob blaze of glory, wiping out their children and ancestors and, you know, extended family members. At least I hope that's what I would do.
Right. And so many people just, they bend the knee. So this is Trump's former spiritual advisor.
Trump's former spiritual advisor has been released from jail after serving just 6 months for molesting a 12-year-old girl. Robert Morris, the 64-year-old founder of Gateway Church, one of the largest megachurches in America, walked out of an Oklahoma jail just after midnight after completing the six-month jail portion of his plea deal. Morris pleaded guilty last October to 5 counts of indecent acts with a minor. The offenses began on Christmas night in 1982 when Morris was a traveling evangelist staying at the victim's family home. Cindy Clemishire says she was molested over a 4.5-year period, starting when she was just 12. Morris served on Trump's Evangelical Advisory Board during his 2016 campaign and hosted Trump at his church in 2020, where Trump called him a great person with a great reputation. Under his plea deal, Morris received a 10-year suspended sentence, but served only 6 months. He must now register as an offender for life and serve 9.5 years of probation.
This was 40 years ago. What took so long?
Well, I'm sure that these, my guess is that's not an isolated incident. But yeah, that what took so long is these people, the same thing that took so long with the Epstein file stuff. A lot of that, the abuses that Epstein was going through, that was in the 80s and 90s too. That was, which is almost 40 years ago, really.
Incredible.
So, boomers were very rapey, I think.
Yeah, totally.
I think they were just generally raping. All right, let's see here. We got on Rumble. Let me back this up here. We got Jimbo Rockford says, in regards to the moon landing hoax, the best debunking of the moon hoax bullshit wasn't a physicist, but a cinematographer. He laid out the argument that it had to be real because the cinematic tech didn't exist at the time to fake it. I don't know why I hadn't thought about it from that angle, but it made a lot of sense. Yeah, it's true. Just the footage from the moon, just some of the real simple things, like, for example, the dust plumes behind, like, the moon buggy fall with zero turbulence, zero reaction to air because there is no air, and there's no trick you could have done to replicate that. Anyone that knows anything about, like, I've been trying to simulate light with 3D animation for, I'd say, over 20 years. And so I know a lot about shadows. I know a lot about specular and reflection and all these, refraction, all this stuff, because I've had to simulate it on a computer for so long. And I know I've studied how it looks in the real world, so I can try to make it look real in my animation stuff. Obviously a lot of that stuff's going to go the way of the dinosaur as we do AI more often, but it's easy to look at that footage as someone that was into special effects and realize what I'm looking at is something that wasn't possible, and not because I just didn't know about the secret technology they had yet. No, it still wasn't possible up until, like, for several decades, it wouldn't be possible. They would need computer animation that was like 40 years into the future to produce the shots that they had and the video that they had. Just look at the footage is a lot of confirmation. It's not the only confirmation, but it's a lot of confirmation of what you need. Then we got, and look, I'll probably do a full stream about moon hoax stuff coming up here. We'll address all this stuff because especially with Artemis flying around right now, I'm just seeing some of the stupidest moon hoax tweets. And every time I respond to one, the people will reply like, oh, that, obviously it's easy to knock this one down. You need to attack the real things. And it's like, okay, what's the real thing? Well, the phone call. And it's like, okay, well, that's dumb too. And you go over why it's dumb. And then someone else is like, well, that's, of course that's dumb. But what you need to know is like the moon rock that was petrified wood. And you're like, okay, well, this is actually, that's a lie from Bart Sabrell. This is what the real story is. Well, of course that's dumb. And it's just like, I feel like I need to sit down and do one stream where I address all of them, because it's just it's annoying to have to convince people that think everything is fake now because you know they overdosed on red pills, that like not everything is fake actually. And
well, you got to be respectful to the audience though.
Well,
because I want my mom to still love you.
Well, like I said, I try to be. I only get bitchy when like. You get like the flat earth attitude of like, stupid globe cuck thinks gravity exists. And you're just like, God, shut the fuck up, dude. Like when they're like, you know, confidently stupid is when I get mad. That's the only time I get mad. Cause look, I questioned the moon landing myself for a little while. Cause like you hear some of the stuff and before you have a chance to actually look into it, some of it does sound reasonable and you're right. You shouldn't just trust the government because they say something. And you could come up with some reasons why maybe they'd want to fake it. But the second you start to actually peel back the onion layers, it's like, oh, okay, never mind. This is actually kind of awesome what we did. And this is basically it's like a manifestation of white power, if anything else. And, I posted that William Luther Pierce had to say about it, who was a physicist. A lot of people forget that he was a physicist as well. And, he had a really moving take on the moon landing and what that meant for our people. And the fact that it's Nazi technology, you know, it was Von Braun was a literal Nazi that developed the rockets that were hitting the UK during the war. And so that was Nazi white people technology that got us on the moon. And I think there's just a lot of people who have a knee-jerk reaction to, you know, their default position is distrust of the government, which I like that.
I understand
But you should also have, you know, maybe take the time to make sure that you're not. I mean, if your government says they're going to build a bridge, and then they build it, are you like, that bridge is fake? I'm not driving on that thing. It's like, well, it's probably not fake. You can see it. You know, there's cars that drive it all the time and you know, they don't lie about everything. So now they might have lied about how much that bridge cost and there are people.
They did lie about that.
Yeah. And people bring that up all the time. Oh, NASA with their infinite budget. It's like, yeah, I'm sure there was just as much fraud and graft as there is in everything that the government does. It doesn't mean they didn't go to the moon. It just means it probably cost more than it had to. And there's probably a lot of people that scammed a lot of money out of it. But, you know, that's going to happen.
Once you go flat, you can't go back. Get out of my chat. Get
out of here. Yeah. No, you have to go back as in like you're getting deported if we ever get. Yeah. The flat earth people are especially dumb. Cause it's like, you know, sorry, white people figured out.
There's so many ways to prove.
Yeah. You can do experiments that people were doing 3,000 years ago. You have no excuse. It's just lazy. You're mentally lazy. Cause here's the thing. You're so sure of yourself. You don't even bother to do the experiment that would save you from looking like an idiot. Yeah. You know, instead you're just like, oh, I don't need to do any kind of experiments. I'm going to call science gay. And then I'm
sympathetic to that. We've been lied to so much.
But flat earth stuff is just, and I'm sorry, that's a level of stupid. I can't have sympathy for it because that's the kind of thing you think about it for 5 minutes and do even like, you know, elementary school level experiments and now, oh, okay, I'm dumb. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Look at the sun as it sets. Look at shadows that are cast by mountain ranges in the morning and in the evening. I mean, there's so many ways that just like look at the 24-hour sun in Antarctica. You know, they took a bunch of flat earthers to Antarctica, and of course all these flat earthers who are, you know, just
where's the wall?
Yeah, well, and they're like, oh, it's all CG. it's all made up. You know, it's like, no, that's why some guy spent tens of thousands of dollars to fly a bunch of you retards down there to show you, and that you're still denying it like everyone knew you would.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Then we got Real Starfish Prime says, wife and I started to watch this on Friday nights, you know, to get in the mood, I guess. Anywho, my wife now wants to send everyone in the roof hole. Good job in corrupting her. Well, that's good to know.
It is an incontrovertible fact that talking about the roof hole leads to sex in couples 100% of the time.
And it formulates white babies.
Truth.
Strong white babies are created by roof hole foreplay. All right, so we got likes to watch, says keep up the great work. Well, I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Then we got, sorry, Supreme Rabbi Satan, we're instituting the minimum. I do appreciate that, though. We're doing the minimum. We got Astralis, 725 nanometers, says habitual killer Negroes. Who ever thought of that?
I know, right?
That's right. Then we got TMK 1335 says, it's been a heavy dose of black pills between Arena's killer being found incompetent to stand trial and the constant flirtation with nuclear obliteration. I'm thankful I've built up my tolerance over the years. A black sniper story is just what I needed to cheer me up. Endless death.
I get a lot of criticisms for us doing a show like this. Like, why aren't you talking about current events and things that are going on are so important? I know that. That's why I do the show with Cameron called The Reset on Thursdays at noon Pacific Standard Time. Shameless plug. But it's nice to get a break sometimes to do something that has a racial angle for mostly entertainment value. I think that provides a service. People can't be glued to current events all the time. It's bad for you. So let's reflect on these historic crimes caused by minorities to make you feel better.
Yeah. Well, and plus there's like a billion other streams that's all they do is they just, I'm going to talk about what was on Twitter today. And it's like, right, why don't I just go on Twitter for that?
Yeah.
Then we got, but thank you very much, TMK1335. Then we got Tom O'Hawk says, never forget diversity is our greatest strength. That is right. That is correct. Then we got Jafig says, I've been entertained by some Texans on Twitter, only now realizing how dire the demographic situation is in their state. Yeah, it's really bad in Texas.
It's really bad.
Maybe they'll realize it wasn't Californians ruining it, but the the YouTube bad words. Yeah, I would say, look, I don't understand how Texas didn't see this coming. It's less than 50% white now, isn't it? Isn't that like the latest?
Yep.
So, it's...
Which means it's 30% white.
Yeah, which means it's done for. Jafig says, Rebecca, you don't look Botox maxed anymore. The week did you well. Devin is
Thank you.
A 2010 to 2019 Corvette Ultra Goy coated. What? Buying a 2010 to 2019 Corvette is Ultra Goy coated? Oh, you're asking me. I don't like the newer Corvettes.
Are those
like
the ones that look like penises?
Well, they just don't look classy. I like the '60s era like Stingrays, like the curvy, you know, Corvettes. It's beginning in the 80s, they started to look like ass. And that's my opinion.
These are so cute. This is a chick car, though.
Well, Corvettes were technically the chick car from the beginning. Because they had the Camaro was for men, and the Corvette, you know, hence the name, they even gave it like a girly name, was for women. But they made them so badass looking, I think, because in the 50s, they looked different. In the 50s, they looked more like T-Birds. And then they almost like an MGB or something like a little cute little, you know, convertible, but then they drop like some fucking big dick engine in it. And then like in the '60s, they got really cool looking and, it's like how Marlboro was like a woman's cigarette. Right. So they kind of just changed marketing in the same way. But I've hated Corvettes since like the 80s, like when they started looking like angular. And the new ones look too much like the Batmobile. Like they almost look like, you know, like those really cheap computer cases in the early 2000s that were made in China. And they would try to make them look like gaming machines by putting like all this stupid plastic and LED garbage all over it. That's just how I look at Corvettes now. But, you know, that's just me. I don't know if it's goy coated. It's probably overpriced. I mean, 2010, how much is one of those? I mean,
20 grand probably.
At least, right? So, and it's got eat up gas. You know, people worried about the new gas crisis. That's going to eat up gas. But, you know, we won't talk shit. Whatever. You do you there, Jafig. I don't think it's like an anti-white car by any means. Then we got Tom O'Hawk says, there just aren't enough roof holes.
Oh, but there aren't.
There are.
Make more.
We can make them. See, it's real easy to make a roof hole. Every roof has a hole. You just haven't uncovered it yet.
Are the grills here?
All right. Then we got Wanderlost. Wanderlost says, I like your new format, Devin. Glad to meet you, Rebecca. Well, there you go.
Oh, thank you so much.
Then we got Unsubverted says, I'm so happy you two are collaborating. Keep it up. Can't wait to see what is to come. There you go.
Me too. It's coming along, this show. I feel good about it.
I do too. And when I'm not riddled with Jew AIDS, I think it'll be even better. Then we got Rayflex says, I'm watching on Rebecca's YouTube channel, but the donating here instead of Google, I assume you guys are splitting it. Devin, I hope you are okay. Are you getting better? Seen a doctor? Honestly, I'm about the same as I was Saturday. So I'm not really getting better, but I'm not getting worse either. So
that's good.
That's a good thing, right? So, yeah.
We are splitting it. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Obviously not Insomnia Stream or my show with Cameron, but we're splitting the show.
Then we got Cage Mushinjaro says, may we make our own name. Reject cope. Reject conformity. Reject mediocrity. Fuck it. We'll do it ourselves. This is true. Then we got Sack of Possums. Sack of Possum says, there's a billboard in the city near me in only Spanish promoting HIV prevention meds with a beaner giving fuck me eyes to the mystery meat nig. Not even a border state sums up modern America. Thanks.
Jeez.
Yeah, there's entire parts of major American cities where every billboard is in Spanish now. So it is what it is. Then we got Jimbo Rockford says, nice fucking accents. Why can't you speak like me? What's that dot on your head? Do you see, or do you use it to see? These are lyrics to the classic song, Speak English or Die, from the seminal hardcore band, .. Stormtroopers of Death. I actually have that CD, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
I have it, and it's stuck in a CD changer.
No.
And I'm going to, it's long story. I have a 5-CD changer that's got that CD and 4 other CDs. And I was trying to get it to work, and I'm just going to break it up with a hammer, I think, and take my CDs out of it. Because just, I can't get it to fucking work. My old boss, when I lived in D.C., gave it to me. And I didn't know he was based. Yeah, I didn't know he was based until he's like, here, you want this? I was like, I don't know, maybe. And I was like, I looked at it, and I was like, oh, this is kind of hardcore. He's from the South, though, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
He says, to illustrate the depth of the Pajit problem, this song came out in 1985. That's right. All right, scroll, scroll, scroll. Cage Mushinjaro says, the reason why space stuff is stupid is because it's morally supporting the government. I don't follow space stuff. Real as it is, we've got bigger problems. Our taxes support endless propaganda now. Well, I would say this to you. I would rather that those millions of dollars go to space than going to, tranny programs or, you know, tranny sex change operations in prisons or, you know, there's a lot of other, like, they're going to be milking us one way or the other. I don't think that because white people are going to space, even though they're sometimes bringing along their pets with them, that's somehow a bad thing. I think that it inspires kids to get involved in high-tech endeavors and be interested in space exploration, which eventually, I mean, that's a ways off. That's nothing any of us will see. You know, we're not going to be colonizing the stars anytime soon. But look, if you want to get away from the Browns, that might be one of the options. You know, how often do you hear white people say, "I was born too late to explore the world, and I am born too soon to explore the stars"? Well,
this is an argument for scientism, like crazy scientism. There's nothing out there. It's just endless nothing. We have all these problems on Earth.
No, but I'm saying
so hubristic.
No, I think we could create colonies out in space. Like, again, this is centuries in the future. It's not going to be next week. But I think that you could absolutely flee the untouchables, the undesirables.
Listen, I'm not going to go live on some fucking space rock because Indians took over my country. All right. There are way more solutions to this.
Well, I'll live on the space rock if they don't have Indians. if they've got a whites-only space rock, you wouldn't live on a whites-only space rock?
No, absolutely not.
I'm totally living on whites-only space rock.
No way. I'm not going anywhere. This is my planet, Jeets.
Even if it's just called space rock and it's like, that's all it is. It's just like a rock in space. Like, it's not even like a proper planet. It's just like some, you know, actual rock. I'd be like, hold on, wait, it's whites only?
No way.
I have to pee in a weird vacuum thing. Whatever. Yeah, I
no
gotta.
No way. Absolutely not.
All of my food is gonna come in a tube, but there's no nigs, right? Okay, let's do it.
That's crazy, crazy talk.
I would be all about that. All right, then we got. I think that's it. Let me just double check on entropy.
Let me double check over here, too.
Yeah, we are all good on my side.
And I think we're all good over here, too.
All right. Well, anything you want to plug or let people know about?
Sure. I am Rebecca Hargraves. You can find me on X at blondes_tweets. If you are watching on Devin's Rumble, you can find me on YouTube. I am at Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. I do a show with Cameron McGregor on Thursdays at noon Pacific Standard Time. It is a current events podcast. We will be there tomorrow. We'll be talking about Iran, about Western archetypes. It's going to be a great show. Please follow me on all of my platforms. I really need it for my ego. Please do it.
Well, there I think you
we're go. Good. Oh, and our Subscribestar is up for Outlaws. It's subscribestar.com/outlaws. The links to all the ways that you can support this show are in the description of my YouTube channel. Hopefully Devin's going to put this on Rumble.
There you go. I will do that. And then, Insomnia Stream, 10 o'clock on Saturdays, 10 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. Although there's a good chance there will not be an Insomnia Stream on Saturday. I was planning on doing the Moon one. But I've got a big thing, big life event type thing I got to take care of this weekend. And I've got Jew AIDS right now.
Yeah.
So there's a good chance it's not going to happen. So just letting you guys know now. So don't be surprised. I'll let people know on Twitter and stuff. But other than that, hope everyone has a good rest of their week. And we've survived World War III. And we'll see you on the next episode of Outlaws next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time.
Yep.
And I guess that's it. Everyone have a good day.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.